Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavanam ki jai. Suradam ki jai. Navadeeptam ki jai. Jagannathaswami ki jai. Yamunamai ki jai. Srimati Lassi Devi ki jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaura Premananda Hari Hari Bol. Oh, glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious, the assembled devotees. All glorious, the assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 42, text 16. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Purushaya. Bahuvir Guptam Architam Paramardimat Varyamano Ribihi
Krishna
Prasaya Anur Adade Purushar Bahu Bir Guptam Architam Paramardimat
Architam Paramardimat
Varyamanon Revere Krishna
Varyamanon Revere Krishna
Prasaya Dhanur Hadade Purushar Bahu Bir Guptam Architam Paramardimat
Architam Paramardimat
Varyamanon Ripi Krishna
Varyamanon Ripi Krishna
Prasaya Dhanurhadate Purushar Bahu Bir Guptam Architam Paramardimat
Architam Paramardimat
Varyamanon Ripi
Krishna
Varyamanon
Ripi
Krishna Vasaya Dhanurhadate
Vasaya Dhanurhadate.
Okay, who wants a chant?
Purushar Bahubi Guptam Architam Paramardimat
Anyone else? Purushai
by men.
Bahubihi
many.
Guptam
guarded.
Architam
being worshipped.
Parama.
Parama.
Supreme.
Supreme.
Ariddhi.
Ariddhi.
Opulence.
Opulence.
Mat.
Mat.
Possessing.
Possessing.
Varyamanaha.
Varyamanaha.
Warded off.
Warded off.
That means like pushed off, or like something like that. So Nribihi,
by the guards.
Krishna,
Lord Krishna.
Prasaya,
by force.
Danuhu,
the bow.
Adade,
picked up.
So translation, that most opulent bow was guarded by a large company of men who were respectfully worshipping it. Krishna pushed his way forward and, despite the guards' attempts to stop him, picked it up. So you can repeat, that most opulent bow,
that most opulent bow
was guarded by
a large company of men,
who were respectfully worshipping it.
Krishna pushed his way forward.
And despite the guards' attempts to stop him, picked it up. So, because there's children here, so I'm just going to read. Okay, I'll read the next two or three verses, because I know if we read till the next purport, we'll be here the whole class reading till the next purport. So I'm just going to read the English for the next two or three or four verses, and then we'll comment. Easily lifting the bow with his left hand, Lord Arukrama strung it in a fraction of a second as the king's guards looked on. He then powerfully pulled the string and snapped the bow in half, just as an excited elephant might break a stalk of sugar cane. The sound of the bow's breaking filled the earth and sky in all directions. Upon hearing it, Kamsa was struck with terror. The enraged guards then took up their weapons, and wanting to seize Krishna and his companions, surrounded him and shouted, "Grab him! Kill him!" Seeing the guards coming upon them with evil intent, Balaram and Keshava took up the two halves of the bow and began striking them down. After also killing a contingent of soldiers, that means a lot of soldiers, sent by Kamsa, Krishna and Balaram left the sacrificial arena by the main gate and continued their walk about the city, happily looking at the opulent sights. Having witnessed the amazing deed Krishna and Balaram had performed and seen their strength and boldness and beauty, the people of the city thought they must be two prominent demigods. As they strolled about at will, the sun began to set, so they left the city with their coward boys and returned to the cowards' encampment. That means their camp. And this, finally, we'll read this. At the time of Mukunda's, Krishna's departure from Vrindavan, the gopis had foretold that the residents of Mathura would enjoy many benedictions, and now the gopis' predictions were coming true, for those residents were gazing upon the beauty of Krishna, the jewel among men. Indeed, the goddess of fortune desired the shelter of that beauty so much that she abandoned many other men, although they worshipped her. So, Omagana Timranda Shah Gananjana Shilakeya Chakshur Unmenitam Yena Tasmai Shigurveda Maha. So, this, of course, is the story of Krishna. Yeah. Oh, you want to do a translation? Okay. Okay. Can you do simultaneous? Then I can go slower. Because if we do back and forth, it's too slow. Okay. Tell me when you're ready. Okay? You ready? Okay. So, of course, this story is told in the context of Krishna leaving Vrindavan and entering Mathura to save his father and mother from the envious Kamsa. So, let's go back a little bit in the story and talk about Krishna leaving Vrindavan. Of course, the person who came for Krishna to take him out of Vrindavan, his name was Akrura, and he is Krishna's uncle. The word Akrura means someone who is not cruel. So it's a very sarcastic type of name, because Akrura was considered the most cruel person because he had taken Krishna away from the gopis. Is this slow enough? Or so I can go faster or slower, but anyway. It's all right. So Krishna had taken... Akrura came to Vrindavan, and the first thing he said was very, very difficult for Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj to hear. Akrura told Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj that actually Krishna is the son of Devaki and Vasudev. Now, this was like a thunderbolt in their hearts when they heard this, because they understood that Krishna was their son. And actually, they were right. Let me tell you a story about this. Once upon a time, Krishna, of course, appeared from Devaki and Vasudev. That's true. First, before appearing, he manifested four arms, and then he came out and is a little baby. But at the same time, very interesting, Yashoda Mai gave birth to two children, a boy and a girl. This is a story told by the great spiritual masters, the great acharyas. And she gave birth to Krishna in Vrindavan, and at the same time, Devaki gave birth to Krishna in Mathura. So that's a great miracle, isn't it? That Krishna was born two places. Because Krishna is God, he can be in many places at the same time. That's called simultaneously. For example, Krishna is in everyone's heart simultaneously. Your heart, my heart, everyone's heart, and in every atom at the same time. Because he's unlimited. He's God. So Krishna was born in both places, but the Krishna who was born in Mathura is called Vasudev Krishna. He's an expansion of Krishna, the same person, but acting in a little bit different way, not as an intimate way like he did in Vrindavan. Only in Vrindavan does Krishna have very intimate pastimes. Only in Vrindavan does he play a flute. Only in Vrindavan does he have a great beauty. Only in Vrindavan does Krishna have these devotees who are very close with him, who can even spank him sometimes. Just like the children know what spanking is. I'm sure they know. Or maybe they don't. Because actually it's illegal nowadays. When I was young, it was not illegal. I got spanked many times by my mother. So nowadays they just call it... Nowadays, you just call the social services and they arrest your parents if you spank them. Anyway, so, but Mother Yashoda, she used to chase after Krishna with a stick. And she even tied Krishna to a grinding mortar. But you don't find that happens outside of Vrindavan. Only in Vrindavan is Krishna acting in such a way to have that intimate, loving exchange with his devotees. So, it's the same Krishna born in Vrindavan and also born in Mathura, but in a different mood. Do all the children understand that? Or can they? Yeah, let me, you know, stop me if I'm getting too philosophical. So, when Vasudev took Vasudev Krishna from the prison house and he took him to Vrindavan, that Vasudev Krishna entered into the original Krishna, Nandanandana. And actually, it was understood that Krishna was the real son of Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. How's that for a story? That story was told by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So Krishna actually was born in his original form in Vrindavan, and he was born in Mathura simultaneously. And then what happened is that Vasudev, he took back the girl who was born at the same time, and that girl was Yoga Maya. And Kamsa, when he saw that the girl was born instead of a boy, he took the girl to kill her. And what happened when he tried to kill her? She flew in the air and manifested 8 arms. And she said that the person who is going to kill you has already been born, Vrindavan. So that's why Kamsa, after Krishna was born, of course, he thought it was just a girl, then he sent all of his soldiers to kill the firstborn or the newly born in Vrindavan. And so not only did he send soldiers, but he sent demons. Do any of the children know who the first demon Kamsa sent? What was the name of the first demon? What? Putana. And Krishna gave her liberation and took her back to Godhead. That's how merciful Krishna is. Krishna is known as an ocean of mercy. Putana, in her last life, was Bali Maharaja's sister. It's interesting, isn't it? Bali Maharaja's sister, of course, everyone knows who Bali Maharaj is. He's the one who took over the whole universe, and Lord Vamanadeva, the dwarf incarnation of the Lord, had to appear to take back everything. So what happened is when Vamanadeva, that's Krishna's dwarf incarnation, came to take back everything, Bali Maharaja's sister looked at him and thought, oh, he is such a nice little boy. I want to be his mother. But then, when Lord Vamanadeva took everything from Bali Maharaj by taking 3 steps, you know, the first step over the earth, second step over the universe, and then third step was Bali Maharaj's head pushing him down to the lower regions of the universe. When that happened, she got so angry at Lord Vamana, she thought, I may be his mother, but I'm going to kill him. So she had 2 different desires or motives, to kill him and to be his mother. So in the next life, she took birth as Putana. And then she got a chance to try to kill Krishna. But because she also wanted to be his mother, you know, she fed him her breast milk. Then Krishna just accepted the good part and got rid of the bad part. That's how nice Krishna is. If we have a good part, Krishna will see that, and the bad part he just like gets rid of. Pretty good, isn't it? He's a nice God. Sometimes you have people in other religions, and they have the opposite idea of God. That God sees the bad part and the good part, and he gets rid of the good part. And he sends you to hell forever because of the bad part. We were talking about that before with Jayananda, right? That God is, sometimes people in other religions, God is pictured as a very mean ogre, lakshasa, ogre, who just would send people to hell and torture them forever. And then it's better to be an atheist if you have a God like that, right? I mean, I'd rather be an atheist than worship a God who's like Ravana, basically. So our God, Krishna, is so kind that even if you are a little good and a lot bad, he only sees the good part. And he takes you back to Godhead. Wow. I'm happy to be a devotee. It's such a nice God we have. So that's Krishna. So Krishna took Putana back to Godhead, and she became his mother in the spiritual world. Wow. And then so many other demons came. And after Krishna killed all the demons, and he got a little older, then he started dancing with the gopis when he was about 16. But then Akrura came. And Akrura, the most uncruel but cruel person, the name means uncruel, but he's very cruel. Akrura told Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai that actually Krishna was Vasudeva Devaki's son. So they were just like heartbroken. They were crying. And Mother Yashoda started to hide Krishna. She hid him behind a curtain. And then, but Akrura found him. And then what happened is that Akrura put him on the chariot, and then Krishna jumped off the chariot to be with the gopis. And so Akrura looked, and where is Krishna? And Akrura said to Balaram, "You go find your brother." And Balaram knew that Krishna was with the gopis, because the gopis had taken away, and he dragged Krishna. He said, "Krishna, you have a duty. There's no time to play right now. You have a duty to save your father and your mother, Vasudeva and Devaki." So they took him in the chariot. And on the way to Vrindavan, they stopped at Vishram Ghat, and Krishna showed Akrura that he was actually Lord Vishnu. Then they continued to Mathura. And when they arrived in Mathura, all the residents of Mathura were very pleased to see how beautiful Krishna was. And then Krishna thought that I should dress up more nicely, because in Vrindavan, he was dressed like a coward boy. So that means basically a little messy. Because when you're taking care of cows, it's a little messy, you know, coward boy outfit. So now I'm in Mathura, I should dress in like a king or a prince. So then he saw that there was a washerman. And this washerman was washing Kamsa's clothes. And he said to the washerman, "Please give me some clothes." And the washerman said, "No, you stupid boy, get away from here. This is the king's clothes." And then Krishna said, "Okay." And he cut the head of the washerman off and took the clothes. And he was dressed in the king's clothes, because Krishna wanted to dress appropriately and nicely for Mathura. The children following so far? At least one. At least one. But anyway, they're important. The children are more important than adults anyway. But then anyway, this is interesting even for the adults. So then Krishna was dressed very, very nicely, and he thought, "Well, we should have some nice sandalwood on us to cool us down." So then he went to this hunchback lady. Her name was Kubja. And this hunchback lady was preparing sandalwood for Kamsa. And she said, Krishna teased her first. He says, "Oh, my beautiful lady, beautiful, nice, straight-looking lady." And she got really angry. She said, "How can you tease me like this?" And Krishna said, "Just give us some sandalwood." And then she looked at Krishna, became so much attracted to Krishna's beauty. What did she do? She began to rub the sandalwood on Krishna and Balaram's body. And then Krishna grabbed her by her cheeks and made her back straight. But there's a whole story about this Kubja. That in the past, her last life, Jai, Shishi Panchatattva Ki Jai. In Kubja's last life, she was actually a demoness. And her name was Surpanaka. I think many of you heard of Surpanaka before. Surpanaka was Ravana's sister. And she was called Surpanaka because she had long nails that curved like this. Sometimes even nowadays, the ladies like to have long nails like that. One time I was in an airplane, and the airplane was landing, and the lady sitting next to me started to put her nails on. And they were this long. She was getting ready for her boyfriend. So she was sticking on these artificial nails. And I said, "Oh my God, I got scared. I thought she was going to use them on me." So what happened is that Surpanaka, in the Ramayana, this is a story about Lord Ram, she saw Lord Ram and Lakshman in the forest. First she was thinking of eating them because she was a Rakshasa. Rakshasas like to eat people. And sometimes they eat cows, sometimes they eat people. Sometimes they eat anything. They even eat each other. In the Ramayana, it's described that Rakshasas, some of them have like heads coming from their stomach, heads coming from their back, five heads, or feet coming from their heads. They're really terrible creatures. So she was a terrible creature, Rakshasa. And she had gotten the benediction from Lord Brahma that she could take on any form she wanted. When Ravana got his benediction of not being killed by any demigods or higher creatures, she asked for benediction from Lord Brahma, and she got the benediction that she could change her form to look like anything she wanted. So then, when she was flying through the sky, and she wanted to, originally she wanted to eat the human beings, but when she saw Lord Ram, she thought, well, I can enjoy more with him for my whole life if I get married to him. And I eat him, it's just enjoying for 5 minutes. So better to enjoy for a longer time. So she looked down and she said, well, I should get married. And then she changed her form into a beautiful girl. And she came before Lord Ram and said, my dear sir, will you marry me? You know, it was very quick, like that. She didn't, no, you know, no introduction, no, hello, I'm Surpanaka, who are you? She immediately said, you know, will you marry me? And he said, there's a problem. I would love to marry you, but my wife is here and she wouldn't like it very much. But my brother Lakshman, he doesn't have his wife there. So you go to him. And so then Surpanaka went to Lakshman and said, Lakshman, please marry me. And Lakshman said, there's a problem. If you marry me, you will always be a servant to Ram and his wife. So I'm sure if you ask Ram to get married, he'll agree, because sooner or later he'll forget his thin-waisted wife, because Surpanaka had a big belly, like some German person who drinks beer. Anyway, I think you understand what I mean by that. So then she went back to Ram and said, Ram! And eventually she got angry, understanding that the brothers were teasing her, and she tried to kill Sita Devi. Her real form came out, and the nails came out like real long. She said, I'm going to kill Sita Devi. Then Lakshman came and cut off her nose and her ears. And then she went away screaming. And then eventually she brought Ravan back, who kidnapped Sita Devi. So that was Kubja in her last life. And so then Kubja came, and she was straightened up by Krishna, fell in love with Krishna, and eventually became a pure devotee. So that also proves that Krishna takes the good and he doesn't look at the bad, right? Think about that. It's an interesting story. That Krishna is so nice like that, that even if we're 99% bad and 1% good, Krishna will take us. Very interesting. So let's get back to the story of Kamsa. So why did Krishna break the bow? This is an interesting story. And because it made Kamsa very scared. Kamsa was actually dreaming at night and seeing himself without his head or not seeing a reflection in the mirror. And Kamsa was getting scareder and scareder and scareder of Krishna. And the reason Krishna was doing that was to make Kamsa think of him more. Because when you think of Krishna in anger, or you think of Krishna in love, you still get purified. Which is very interesting. That however you think of Krishna, whether you want something or you're angry with Krishna, but if you meditate on Krishna with great attention, you get purified. I mean, just like you have the story of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj meditated on Krishna in order to get a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. We all know that story. He was kicked out by his father because his father was influenced by Suruchi, his stepmother. And then Dhruva Maharaj thought the only way to have my kingdom is to worship Krishna. And he performed great austerities, but he's had such a big desire. Like there's this verse, little Sanskrit, because the children won't understand the Sanskrit. Akama sarvakama moksha-kama daradi tibrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether one is full of material desires, free of material desires, or desirous of liberation, one should worship Krishna. And when he worshipped Krishna with great attention, he became purified. And then he became a great devotee. He wasn't interested in anything material. So Prabhupada also shows that example in his own childhood, that when he and his sister were flying kites, they would pray to Krishna that the kites would fly. It's interesting, isn't it? They would actually pray to Krishna that there'd be enough wind so the kites would fly. So Krishna's just proving how nice Krishna is. That however you approach him, whatever you want, if you pray to him, you'll get purified. Even, of course, we shouldn't hate Krishna, but even in the case of Kamsa hated Krishna, and he got purified because of that, and he got liberated. Then, after this whole story here of breaking the bow, Krishna starts to enter the wrestling arena, but before he enters the wrestling arena, there's this big elephant, mad elephant, that Kamsa sends to try to stop him. Does anyone know the name of that elephant? It starts with a K. Kuvalyapita. And this elephant was so mad. And then Krishna just eventually killed him. Very easily. Jumped on his back, struck him, and he was dead. And then Krishna enters the wrestling arena. So this is all to make Kamsa more and more scared. Because Krishna could have killed him immediately. Krishna could have killed him even just by wanting him to die. Because Krishna is, there's a Sanskrit word, aptakama. Whatever Krishna wants happens immediately. It's interesting, isn't it? Whatever Krishna wants happens immediately. He doesn't even have to do anything. He could just sit back and enjoy life in Vrindavan. Goloka nivasati akilatma bhuta. So Krishna just wanted to make Kamsa good and scared. So then he kills the elephant, you know, breaks the bow, kills the elephant, and then he enters the wrestling arena, and they have these two wrestlers. Does anyone know the name of the wrestlers? Mushtika and Chanura. And these are big, like, monsters of men. And Balaram fights one, and Krishna fights the other, and they end up throwing them in the air, killing them. And Kamsa gets more scared, he tries to run away, and then Krishna eventually kills him. And he drags Kamsa's body through the wrestling arena to show that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he liberates his mother and father, Vasudev and Devaki. So anyway, the purpose of all these pastimes, there's several purposes. One is, of course, to make Kamsa liberated so he's good and scared and thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day. But the other purpose is to attract us, because we like to hear about stories, particularly boys like to hear about stories where there's fighting. I mean, girls maybe not. Like girls, they like to hear stories where there's romance, right? Like there's fighting, you know, not so much. Just like you have these movies, like you see in the material world, like girls are attracted to certain type of movies. Like love stories, and men are attracted to violent movies. I mean, that's just natural. So Krishna has different pastimes that attract each and every one of us. Like the pastimes, the loving pastimes in Vrindavan between Krishna and the gopis can attract those who are attracted to those things. And Krishna's pastimes of killing the demons are attractive to other people. And Krishna's pastimes of entering Mathura and killing Kamsa and saving Kubja and other personalities are attractive to other people. So Krishna has so many attractive features that he is the most interesting God imaginable. Isn't it? And when we think about Krishna, we hear these pastimes, then we lose attraction for things in this world. That's called Raso Varjam Raso Pisha Param Drishtadi Bhartite. We have a higher taste and lose attraction for things of this world. And so that's why we should hear God's pastimes. Outside of Krishna consciousness, outside of our society, there's basically no personal conception of God or no attractive conception of God. I mean, God at the most is depicted as a judge that's sending people to hell. But in Krishna consciousness, God has his own life. Not only does he doesn't, as far as sending people to hell, that's done by Yamaraj. Krishna doesn't have to bother with that. Krishna himself is just enjoying life, just like I told that story the other day, where a English gentleman went into a Hindu temple. And in the Hindu temple, there's so many different deities. There's Ganesh, there's Durga, there's Shiva, and all these deities are doing something. Ganesh is writing, Lord Shiva is meditating, Durga is punishing people with her trident, and there's also Krishna. So this one gentleman walked in the temple and he looked at all the deities, even though he hadn't studied the Vedic literatures before, he's from England, and he said, Krishna is God. And the priest asked him, the priest didn't even know who was God, even though he was a priest. He said, how do you know that Krishna is God? And this English gentleman said, because he is the one who is enjoying life. He's with his girlfriend playing his flute. And everyone else is working. So that's Krishna. So Krishna's enjoying, and we can enjoy by hearing about Krishna's pastimes. Okay. So any questions or comments? The children can ask some questions. I try to be slow and basic for the children's sake. But interesting stories about Kubja and also Sarpanaka and Putana, isn't it? Those are interesting stories told by the Acharyas. So any atheist opinions, Jayananda? Jayananda's studying atheism. He's going to become a PhD in atheistic philosophy. He's going to teach people why you should not believe in God. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for the class. I was wondering about the allowance of the demigods to give these benedictions to persons like Suparnaka, etc.
Yeah.
Why does it appear? It's not the first time we hear that these sort of things happen.
Mm-hmm. Why is this? Well, there's several reasons. First of all, the demigods' benedictions, particularly Lord Brahma's benedictions or Lord Shiva's benedictions, predict how the person is going to die. I mean, it's interesting. There's one story in the Mahabharata about two demons. Their names were Sunda and Upasunda. And they were terrorizing the whole universe. And they ask for benediction from Lord Brahma. And usually they ask for immortality, you know, living forever. And so Lord Brahma usually says, always says, you can't have it. He always says that. Actually, it's interesting. The one person he benedicted with immortality was Vibhishan. It's interesting, isn't it? Ravana asked for, just a side note, Ravana asked for immortality and he said, well, you can't be killed by demigods or higher living entities, but he didn't mention human beings or animals. But when Vibhishan didn't ask for immortality, Vibhishan asked for eternal love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and pious activity, you know, being always pious. And Vibhishan was given the benediction by Lord Brahma, yes, you shall live forever. Interesting, isn't it? So, anyway, get back into the story of Sunda and Upasunda. They were two brothers, and they were big demons. And nobody could stop them. They asked for a benediction from Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma said, you cannot have immortality, but I'll let you choose how you will die. And they said, well, because we love each other so much, we understand that we would never kill each other. So, because they were brothers. And they said, let's die. Oh, the only way we can possibly die is if we kill each other. And they thought, well, we tricked Lord Brahma. Okay. But Lord Brahma was more tricky. Lord Brahma created, he asked for Vishwakarma to come to create the most beautiful girl in the universe. So they took different parts of, you know, like put together a body. You know, the most beautiful nose, the most beautiful eyes, and all the other parts of the body, hair. And her name was Tilotama. The story's in the Mahabharata. And she was so beautiful.
Tilotama.
Which means topmost sesame seed. Because in India, traditionally, if a husband was being very affectionate to his wife, he would call her my little sesame seed. Don't ask me why. It's just a tradition, you know. My little sesame seed. I mean, it's funny for a sannyasi to say that. So she was called Tilotama, which means the best sesame seed. Tilo means sesame. Uttama means topmost in Sanskrit, and also Hindi, too. And so she circumambulated the demigods, and she was so beautiful that many of them grew extra eyes just to see her on the back of their head or something like that. And so Lord Brahma said, you have to go down and arrange that these two brothers kill each other. So she waited until they were drunk. And they were drunk, and they didn't think about too much. And then she came down, and one of them saw her and said, she's mine. And the other one said, she's mine. And they began to fight, and they killed each other. So it actually predicts, just like Lord Brahma giving a benediction to Hiranyakashipu, you know, not the daytime, nighttime, man or beast. It actually predicted the way that he would die. And arranged for the Lord's pastimes, which is really interesting. Because if Lord Brahma hadn't given that benediction, then Krishna, I mean, it wouldn't have been interesting how Krishna would have killed him. It would have been quite boring. Krishna would have just like killed him with a bow and arrow, which he does with everybody else. Or Sudarshan Chakra. I mean, Krishna wants to kill the demons different ways, different times. Otherwise it gets boring. Isn't it? I mean, the demon, okay, shoot him. Okay, another demon, shoot him. Okay. Enough is enough. As they say, been there, seen it, done it. You understand? So Krishna likes to keep life interesting and variegated. So all right, this demon's chakra, this demon a bow and arrow, this demon I cut his head off with my hands like he did with the washerman. And this demon ripped him to shreds, take him his intestines out. So Krishna just likes to have fun killing demons in different ways. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, if you were having the same fight every day, it'd be quite boring. Or like the way that Rikasura died. He asked for benediction from Lord Shiva after getting ready to offer his head to Lord Shiva, that whoever's head he touched would die, the head would split a million of pieces. So the way Krishna arranged things then was that this demon started chasing Lord Shiva to kill Lord Shiva so that he could take Parvati, Lord Shiva's wife, away. And so then Krishna said to the demon, Krishna took on a form like a little bhakta, Shiva bhakta, and he said to the demon, the benedictions don't really work that Lord Shiva gives, so you should test it first on yourself. So he took his hand, touched it to his head, and his head split in 1,000 or a million pieces, and that's how he died. You know, so Krishna has interest. He's such an interesting God that he has interesting ways even of killing people, of saving people, killing people, just like the way he saved Prahlad Maharaj many times. Prahlad Maharaj was thrown off a cliff and Krishna caught him. And the way he saves his devotee, I mean, the way he saved Draupadi, for example. They were attempting to take Draupadi's sari away, Dushasan, in that assembly place. And then Krishna supplied unlimited saris. I mean, Krishna could have done it a different way. Krishna could have cut everyone's head off. But he's so interesting, he's so dramatic, that he does things in so many different ways to keep our attention and for his own enjoyment. Like we were mentioning on Lord Drishnigadev's appearance day, that the reason Krishna does everything is because he enjoys doing it like that. He likes it. Like we were talking, remember we talked on, those who were there for my class, we talked about the 7 indirect rasas. You know, the 5 direct rasas and the 7 indirect rasas. So the 7 indirect ones, like adbhuta, you know, surprise or shock, and then hasya, humor. I mean, Krishna's a joking God. And who can imagine, outside of Krishna consciousness, that God tells jokes? I mean, could you imagine that? God laughs. And, you know, so, and then also he's angry. You know, of course, outside of Krishna consciousness, everyone thinks God is angry. That's not a problem. And then, I mean, so many other. Ghastliness is another indirect humor. I don't remember the list right now, but in any case, it really makes life interesting. It makes God's life interesting. So that's why the different benedictions are given by the demigods, as service to God, basically as service to Krishna. That's what it is. They're serving Krishna by helping him in his pastimes, by giving those benedictions. Is that all right? So any other questions? Yes.
When Hiranyaksha cast the earth planet,
yeah.
What happened to the inhabitants of the earth?
I guess they learned how to swim. I mean, that's not explained in the Vedic literatures, but I mean, obviously, it was a difficult time for them because they were in the Garbhodak Ocean. Of course, the Garbhodak Ocean is not ordinary water. That's another point. You know, when we hear about these things in the universe, for example, about the ocean of milk, the ocean of liquor, it's not like the gross matter that we have nowadays. Like if you had just an ocean of milk, it would probably curdle within about a day. And you have an ocean of curds, and then it would start to smell bad as it rotted after 2 days. So obviously it's something more subtle, because the Garbhodak Ocean comes from the perspiration of Garbhodak Shai Vishnu. So it's not really like... So in other words, they could have survived. They could have survived in the Garbhodak Ocean because it's not that it's like the, you know, the oceans that we have here, like the Atlantic Ocean, Pacific Ocean, Mediterranean Sea. It's obviously different than that. So somehow or other it was... Because there are planets within the Garbhodak Ocean, and the people aren't drowning to death in the Garbhodak Ocean. So that would be my explanation. You know, jokingly, I said they had learned how to swim, but that's not the answer. The answer is the Garbhodak Ocean is not gross water. It's something subtler. So the people were able to survive, yeah.
Hare Krishna. There is one thing I cannot understand, but maybe I misunderstood something. As I understood, Krishna has killed that washing man.
Yeah, with his hands, yeah.
Yeah, but I can understand that Krishna different ways kills some demons or somebody, but washing man, he's like just servant who is serving his boss. He's washing the clothes. But why Krishna kills him? Why Krishna stop some other way and just take it?
It's Krishna. Well, that's the way Krishna wanted to do it, but because he was actually nasty to Krishna. Not only did he refuse, but he was blaspheming and extremely nasty to Krishna. And so Krishna just wanted to teach him a lesson. Prabhupada talks about that pastime. He's saying that this shows that Krishna didn't even need a Sudarshan Chakra disc to cut someone's head off. He can do anything with any part of his body. So, yeah, he was blasphemous, committing offenses, like with Shishupal, something like that. It's not that he said, you know, you can't have any clothes, but please accept my obeisances anyway. He was actually extremely nasty and challenging, and I think he even took a stick to try to hit Krishna and drive him away. So it was self-defense, so to speak. Anyway, when Krishna kills someone, that's his kindness. I mean, I wouldn't mind getting killed by Krishna. Because you get, I mean, liberated. And people who died in the battle of Kurukshetra, they all were liberated because Krishna was there. So, but it doesn't excuse our killing. You know, obviously, we can't go around killing people. We shouldn't go around killing people. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? Jayananda, our atheist?
Yeah.
And Nietzsche said that.
Oh, the,
yeah, that's nice. I could believe in a God who knows how to dance. So our God knows how to dance. He knows how to jump from mountains like 90 miles high, like when he was running away from Jarasandha. I mean, such an interesting thing. If you think of all the Krishna things, Krishna marries 16,108 wives, you know, takes his chariot and goes across, pierces through the universe to save Arjuna's life. I mean, just amazing things. The way he kills demons, he enters into their mouth, like with the Gasura, or Dainakasura, Balaram and Krishna just take the little ass demons and throw them in the trees. I mean, it's just really interesting. It's really interesting what Krishna does, how he arranges for his path, and his devotees too. I mean, I was just thinking about this Mahabharata, how this one story was very, I mean, all this, the whole thing's very interesting. Like, when the Pandavas left the house in Varnavat, you know, the burning house, that the Kurus tried to kill him, Dhritarashtra tried to kill him in this burning house, and the Pandavas went into exile in disguise. And so the first thing they run into is this Rakshasas, Hidimba and Hidimbi. You know the story? These two Rakshasas. And Hidimba, the lady Rakshasa, falls in love with Bhimsen. And, you know, and then Bhimsen kills her brother, and then they get married. Bhimsen and her get married. As a result, this Rakshasa Ghatakacha is born. And, you know, it's just such an interesting pastime, even to Krishna's devotees. You know, Krishna's, like we hear about Prabhupada, Prabhupada's pastime, so interesting. So not only Krishna's pastimes, but every one of Krishna's devotees, we can hear about Krishna's, their pastimes. Like the Mahabharata is such an amazing book. If we understand it's the pastimes actually not only of Krishna, but the Pandavas. You know, because the Pandavas are great pure devotees of the Lord. So interesting. Everything they do. Draupadi being born from fire. She's called Yajnasaini, which means she was born from a yajna. And she's born from fire. And then, anyway, so many things. I mean, I just love the pastimes of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. I could just think about them all day long. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Did you permission just want to tell something which happened by His Holiness Achyananda song? Krishna's pastimes is the solution for every problem.
Yes.
And our problem in our society is, unfortunately, we hear so less about Krishna's pastimes. Many philosophies, cult, poet, and this and that. And sometimes we just avoid to hear. And I'm not so qualified to hear about Krishna's pastimes. Oh, no. But that's the time to hear more and
yeah.
More about Krishna's pastimes.
That's where the nectar is, you know, in Krishna's pastimes. The philosophy is to help us control our minds so we can hear Krishna's pastimes. That's the purpose of the philosophy. But if you get too much into the philosophy and you forget that the purpose is to hear Krishna's pastimes, you just become, a philosophical speculator, basically. just dealing with the philosophy. But we're meant to experience bhava, or emotions. And emotions come from contact with the Lord and his devotees and pastimes. I mean, like one of my godbrothers, Gaur Govindamar, said about his temple in Bhubaneswar, he says, I'm opening up a crying temple. In other words, emotions. People should have emotion. Krishna consciousness is from the heart. The brain is useful. We were talking about this the other day. The brain is useful and the stomach is useful. But the heart is the real thing. And that sometimes in our movement, the heart is neglected and it's just the brain and the stomach. And it would be like that that demon in the Ramayana, Kabanda, who just had a mouth and a stomach and long arms. His arms were like 8 miles long, one yojana long. And he reached out to get Ram and Lakshman, who was going to put him in his mouth. So the heart is the most important part of the body. I mean, that's, even according to our philosophy, the soul is in the heart. The soul is not in the stomach or in the head. The soul is in the heart. So the heart means emotions, feelings. The head means thoughts, intellectuality, which is good in its place to help focus on the proper heart thing. Because otherwise, if we didn't have the head, our heart would get into sentimental material things. You know, we'd start to read novels about, you know, somebody, some, you know, I haven't read a mundane novel in years. What's the name of a mundane novel, Jayananda? Gone with the Wind. You've heard about that before? No. Anyway, some different mundane novels or science fiction. When I was young, I used to read science fiction a lot. You know what science fiction is? You don't know what that is. And I used to watch Star Trek. I don't know if any of you know what that is. And I found it interesting. So, but we know that they use the intelligence to focus on Krishna's pastimes instead of Star Trek. Or Star Wars, Star Trek, or something like that. So the intelligence is useful, but to focus on the right thing, focus the heart. Intelligence also controls the stomach, too. The tongue, you know, tongue, belly, and the stomach. The intelligence is very useful, but that's not the goal. The intelligence is an instrument for the heart. Good point. Okay. Maybe we should end now, or it's time for prasad? Yeah, because it's time for the stomach. All glories to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Let's see how many people were watching. Oops. Oh, it's not bad. Let's see. 14 people were watching.
How many?
14.
14.
1-4, yeah. 1-4.
Seems like what you're